Good evening, my dear friends. As you know, this is Saturday, right day of the week. I'm here, you're there. We're here to share with one another, along with my favorite friend here, Richard.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Well, he didn't hang me out to dry this week. He actually answered. I think.
You're still waiting.
Anyway, if you get our email, you know that we invited Max, the Crystal Skull, to be on the show today. And I don't usually have a guest so many times, but I tell you, Max is so charming. I'm really getting to love this Max. And we have had people who have connected with us to ask Max questions, and his answers are so breathtaking and complete. I had to have him come another time because I have to say, we love Max. And if you are a listener to the show, you know that one way that you can tune into the energies of our guests is to see their face in your third eye. Pay attention to what's going on in the heart, in the heart center, and you should be able to pick up the energies. You might be able to pick up the energies that Richard is feeling when he connects with our guest. So, Richard, I turn this over to you now. Tell us about Max.
Well, he's a bit like he has been in the previous times I've done this. I experience him, as I've described, quite centrally, almost singular in nature. And as I've said before, there is this great sense of love from Max, which some might find surprising. But there is this great love, and as I said, this singularity, you might say, of focus. And I think that singularity is a reflection of the fact that Max does not carry a soul. And so it's interesting. We've been learning in our working with Max that there are, you might say, benefits and disadvantages in whether a consciousness carries a soul of some sort or not. Because one of the things that we've come to understand is that with a soul there is, you might say, more color, more complexity. But on the other side, we have found that because Max does not carry her soul, our dark friends that continue to challenge us are unable to interfere with Max. So it's very interesting.
So, Richard, does Max have a message for our listeners this week?
Well, a good question. Let's see what he has to say, if anything. I come forth in this manner with great joy, because I am aware of how many of you are truly interested in asking me questions. I, you see, am able to witness your thoughts, your desires, your preferences. It is very interesting when you are not part of that, you might say, linear human consciousness, that narrow experience that is part of your dimensional experience. I am able to witness things that you are not. And even though I'm present upon the planet, the restrictions that apply to you as a soul incarnated into this consciousness do not apply to those expressions of consciousness on the planet that do not carry a soul. Indeed, there are souls present that do not carry those restrictions either, and one of those is Gaia, because she is not bound by these restrictions, if you will, that have arisen with the fall. So this shift, you might say, has applied to all of humanity, and indeed to all of the animals and even the insects, and to an extent the plants on the planet. But even though the particles have become much more dense as a result of the fall, a consciousness such as mine is actually not impacted by this shift. So this might sound a little bizarre to you, but that is how things are. And so I witness the interest that so many of you carry in bringing forth your questions so that I may bring forth answers to those questions. And so it is with great joy that I have returned, and indeed it is also with great joy that I have begun to do these one-on-one sessions that really at my request, Carolyn and Richard have begun to offer to those of you who are interested in setting up such a session. I truly am excited with all of this because in so many ways it is deeply connected to the mission that I carry in being here upon the planet.
Thank you, Max. We certainly do love hearing from you, and I particularly am becoming extremely fond of you. You have become such a friend to me, and you bring me great joy because not only do you answer questions, but you answer them in such a complete manner, and some very complicated information you bring forth in a way that we can understand it. So I really appreciate your work, and I thank you. I would like to mention to those who are listening, you are here to ask your questions, and Max will answer them. I would like to suggest that you ask your questions early in the show, because since Max answers so completely, we are not able to get many people on the program. We only, well, we have an hour, and it seems like a long time, but not once we begin this questioning. And as I said, the answers are long. I have become interested in the pyramid that we know of in Egypt as that one outside of Cairo, Cheops. And I would like to ask Max a couple questions about it. One, I have noted that inside the pyramid there does not seem to be any marks on the walls where the builders of the pyramid used a torch or a flame of some sort to light the interior. And so I would like to ask Max, what did those ancient people use when they were building the pyramid to light the interior?
There were ways that humanity could bring forth light in the past that has essentially been forgotten. Indeed, not only could the internal spaces of the pyramid be illuminated, but indeed all of the passageways which lead underground to the pyramid and up into the pyramid. For the most part, these passageways have been lost in your time, but indeed they were very well known and very extensively used for a very long time, even up until the time of Yeshua. So these passageways were understood and used, and indeed there were those present still in that time who understood how to bring forth this illumination, and those who worked with the pyramid even as late as Yeshua's time could take advantage of that lighting. And in any case, the way that the pyramid was structured, the way it was constructed, was that the fittings, you might say, were put in place largely with spaces open to allow light to enter from the outside. So there was not a great requirement, as the pyramid was being built, for there to be the kind of illumination I am speaking about. Yes, it was required, but not as much as you might expect. The thing to recognize about the construction of the pyramid is that it was undertaken in a manner which saw the stone that was used to construct it rendered, you might say, as light as a feather and quite soft. And so it could be worked and it could be moved around with relative ease. It is hard for you to imagine that what you experience as being massively heavy and great slabs of stone that would require very large cranes to move around were moved in that time with great ease. And indeed, there are many other examples upon your planet where this has been undertaken. So the perception of how the pyramid was constructed is rather different from how, in fact, it was undertaken.
Thank you, Max. And it sounds to me like perhaps the same technology was used that was used with the building of the Gothic cathedrals. Is that correct?
It is the same kind of technology, indeed.
Mm-hmm. If I understood you correctly, you said that there were openings between the stones when the pyramid was built and light came in. Did I understand that correctly?
It was not so much that there were openings between the stones, but rather it was built in a manner where the pyramid itself was not enclosed, as some of the internal spaces were being created, you might say. So it is not as if the external structure was completed and then the internal spaces were, you might say, crafted inside. Rather, it was, for the most part, built piece by piece, built up in a vertical fashion. So this notion of not being able to see inside was not an issue because it was open to the outside. And so it is not that there were gaps between the rocks, but rather the rocks were not there.
I see. Thank you so much. That clarifies my thoughts. We want to get right to our callers, and Roxanne is on line one. Welcome, Roxanne. Is Roxanne hearing me? Well, apparently Roxanne got tired of waiting, and that is a pity because we're here connected to Max. Now, Max, I'm intrigued with the pyramid. Underneath of the pyramid, there were chambers, or not a chamber so much as a tunnel, that stopped. It didn't seem to connect to anything that I could recognize. So, Max, can you give me some idea what that configuration was underneath of the pyramid that went into lower into the ground?
The pyramid was used for many purposes, and one of the purposes was an initiation process. You may be aware that there were a number of temples that were distributed along the Nile, and those temples represented an initiation path of sorts. And many of those who walked that path, you could say, did so over a number of lifetimes. However, there were some who progressed along that path very quickly, such as Yeshua and Mary Magdalene did. And the access to the final phase of initiation, you might say, which was conducted in what is known as the King's Chamber, required a passage into the pyramid from underneath. And you might say there were some tests along the way. And so, as I mentioned, the tunnels went underground for quite a long way, even as far as some distance into what is now Cairo. And so there were these challenges that needed to be satisfied, these tests that were conducted underground as the individual worked their way through those tests underground to reach the pyramid. And when an individual was being conducted in that final initiation phase, when they were resident in that it is not really a coffin, I can't get the word. Where the individual would lie in the king's chamber, there were individuals who took up what you might consider stations in various places within the pyramid and indeed underneath the pyramid to support the individual energetically as they undertook that work. And so the passages underneath the pyramid and leading into the pyramid were actually a very important part of its use for those purposes. So in the past, there were indeed extensive tunnels underneath the pyramid and leading well away from the pyramid, or more accurately, leading from well away from the pyramid to the pyramid itself.
Thank you, Max. I wanted to talk about the Egypt. I'm staying with the topic of Egypt at the moment, and I'm trying to think of what they call that spire, that tall, if I can't think of it, I'll go on to another question, that tall piece of stone that came into a top, a point at the top. Do you know?
I can't think of it either. There's one in Washington. There's one in
Paris. Yeah. Oh. Obelisk.
Obelisk. Thank you. Well done.
I didn't think of it. Okay. Now, it's my understanding that when the obelisk was carved, that for the most part, that was a crystalline rock. Is that correct, Max?
These indeed were carved from a solid piece of rock, and it was not that it was a single individual crystal, but indeed the rock was an individual piece. So indeed it was crystalline, but made up of many small crystals, not one large crystal.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was. Thank you. And is this true that it set up a vibration throughout Egypt?
There were many of these obelisks, as you understand it, that were created. And indeed, these structures were cut to a very specific shape such that they did carry a particular resonant frequency. And in some locations there were several of these, and indeed they interacted with each other to set up, you might say, a strengthened form of that vibration. You might say they resonated with each other. These were very carefully and accurately crafted for this purpose. And indeed, they did generate a powerful resonant frequency, which was used to assist those working for example, in the area of a temple where they might be, to raise their frequency, because the frequency of these was what you might consider quite high. And so they actually served a spiritual purpose. It is not the case that they set up a resonance throughout all of Egypt, but rather it was focused on the area where the obelisks were located.
That's beautiful, Max. Thank you. Susan is on line one with a question. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. I have heard from a starseed that taking crystal points, specifically Lemurian crystal points, and then programming them, or what I would like to say is asking them if they would be willing to accept a certain assignment, to take these crystal points and then bury them in, like, for instance, your backyard or a meadow or something like that, to serve as a portal or a vortex connected to the crystalline cortex around Gaia, to help bring forth the peace and the love and the freedom and the joy, all those things necessary for the golden age of Gaia or Nova Earth to begin. Could you speak to this and tell me if this is correct information or what we can do in terms of assisting Gaia in her ascension along with the surface humanity?
We've got a lot of questions in this, so let's start with something simple. You're wondering if people take the points of crystals and bury them with the intent on helping Gaia in some way, is this in fact true? We'll start with that. Is that your thoughts, Susan?
Yes, I want to know if that creates a vortex or a portal.
Okay, a vortex or a portal.
Link up with the crystalline grid. Okay.
Okay, we'll go from there. So this is a simple part of the question.
As I have explained previously, the shape of a crystal, for the most part, is not significant. I know I have just spoken of the specific shaping of the obelisks, but indeed they were not individual crystals and their focus was rather different. In the case of a crystal that you might have, it really is relatively unimportant for most of the uses that you might seek to make of it. That it be of a particular shape or size, or whether it be buried or otherwise, these things really do not impact to any great degree the effectiveness with which a crystal can be utilized. You simply need to clear that crystal, as I have previously described, and to open up your connection with it, and then use your intention to, you might say, program that crystal for whatever purpose that you wish. And it is not really the case that a crystal buried, as you have described, will open up a portal or a vortex in the manner that you are seeking. Rather, simply intend that crystal do all within its power to clear all negative energies from your area and to assist in raising the vibration of the planet. This really is quite sufficient. The rest is becoming, in my view, a little abstract and unnecessary. Some people use crystals to clear negative energies from a particular area and to keep them cleared. And in those circumstances, they may well bury those crystals as you have described, because in doing so, it means that they remain in that location. And that individual might place those crystals when they are visiting an area and then leave, perhaps go to the other side of the world, and those crystals can continue to do their work. And because they are varied as I have described. They are not within the sight of somebody else to come and pick them up and to reprogram them or do whatever they might do with them. And so for the most part, the reason for burying a crystal is simply to put it out of harm's way, you might say.
Susan, I think that answers your question, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. In conjunction with your answer, Max, we think of crystals being white, but we know that there are crystals of different colors. Does the color have any bearing on the work that a crystal does?
Most of the crystals that you tend to focus on, that people tend to focus on, are quartz crystals, and these tend to be white or almost perhaps silvery in color in some cases. And they may carry some impurities which add a little color because, for example, there is rose quartz. And also there are crystals of other forms of rock, of different kinds of minerals. They will operate just as effectively as a quartz crystal. It does not matter really what the purity of that crystal is or the mineral makeup of that crystal. There is an expression, an energetic expression that arises when a crystal is formed. And whilst I have said that size is unimportant, it is necessary for crystal to reach a certain minimum size for it to be able to function in the way that I am describing. But in your terms, that is relatively small. So it really matters little what the actual formation, if you will, of the crystal is.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate that very much. Maria is on line two. Maria, welcome. Do you have a question for Max?
Yes, Caroline, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Thank you. It's been so wonderful and so interesting. I have a question. Max says that he doesn't have a soul, but he can read our thoughts, and obviously he knows everything about humanity. Can the crystal, a crystal like him, understand feelings or emotions? Can he feel our pain or our joy in terms of... I think that's
my question. We'll find out, Maria. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Max.
It is an interesting question that you ask. As you perhaps understand, the key aspect for humanity to experience the array of emotions that you do is because you carry the powerful emotional body that you do, which is unique in creation. And this allows you to experience this broad array of emotions. And I am unable to experience those emotions in the way that you do, though I do experience love. And the other element that I would say about this is that all emotions do reflect a certain vibration. And so I can, you might say, detect the vibrations associated with a particular emotion, but I do not experience that emotion in the way that you do. So I can be aware that you might be experiencing sadness, but it is not in my experience to know what sadness feels like to you, because I do not carry the emotional body that you carry.
There you go, Maria.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes. I would just like to take a moment and remind those who are listening to this show that Richard is using what we call the magic of the right side of the brain. And I have to say that he is a master of this. He teaches people how to connect with consciousness. We will say that Max is a consciousness. And so Richard is working with Max as a consciousness from the right side of his brain. He teaches this. You can join him online and learn how to do it. And it is quite remarkable how we can use this. We can use right brain magic with our friends, with our families. We can speak to the souls of our friends, which sounds quite unusual, because if you have a problem with a child and you know how to use the right side of the brain, the spiritual side of the brain, you can get information as to how you can help that child. Also, Max can answer questions about that. I feel that that is one of the extraordinary things that Max does, is that he can, if there's a problem in the family, he can connect and he can give people an idea as to how to clear and work with these things with family members, friends, people that we work with. So I just want to point out how this is done and give you some thought of the breadth and depth of this work. Now, Graham is on line 3. Graham, welcome. Do you have a question?
Yes, it's actually Grant.
Oh, Grant. Sorry.
Yeah,
we'll grant you the right to ask a question.
Yes, all right. Yes, it's for Max, of course.
Yes.
Alfred Weber of X Politics has just stated that 6 million beings in Europe have been robotized. They have implants in them from either injections, DNA, or breathed in from chemtrails. Could you verify if this is true?
Yes, we'll ask Max, but would you give me that name of the gentleman, because I didn't hear that. Who said that?
Yes, okay. It's Alfred Weber of XO Politics.
Okay. Max?
You may be aware that there have been projects undertaken upon the planet to what you might call robotize individuals. Indeed, the term has emerged of the super soldier, those that have been subjected to processes to fragment the mind, to compartmentalize the mind, and in so doing, set up a range of persona. Also, a range of mechanisms have been used to strengthen the body and indeed to change its nature to some extent by inserting non-human DNA and many other processes. This has become quite sophisticated in its work. And there are hundreds of such individuals on the planet. But it is not so that things like chemtrails and so on can undertake this work. This has not happened. The purpose of the chemtrails is rather different. So I am aware of Alfred and his work, and he certainly makes a great contribution by opening some doors that might otherwise remain closed. But there are times when Alfred strays over the edge, you might say, in terms of what he accepts to be the truth of things.
There you go, Grant.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Max, you brought up this word chemtrails, and I'm interested in that. Can you give us and our listeners some idea as to what a chemtrail is and the purpose of it?
There have been extensive programs undertaken by the military, particularly in the United States, but not only in the United States in more recent times, in Europe also in particular, not so much in Africa or indeed South America. Rather, this has been focused primarily upon the United States, to some degree Canada and Europe. And there have been many compounds used for this work. These compounds, you might say, serve several purposes. The key purpose that these compounds, or in some cases, metal particles, are sent forth in these chemtrails is to enhance the ability to use such tools as HAARP. These particles enable the utilization of those frequencies to modify weather and indeed influence many other things upon the planet that are significantly enhanced as a result of the presence of these compounds or metallic particles in the atmosphere. This is the primary use of chemtrails and has, in this instance, little to do with the direct impact upon humanity of those chemtrails. However, there are some of those chemtrails which contain significant quantities of aluminium or aluminium, as you might call it. And these compounds containing aluminium in some cases can impact the health of individuals. And I would have to say that those that are using these materials are relatively unconcerned about the impact that they might have upon a human being. So, for the most part, the impact of the chemtrails is of a second-order nature. They are not, for the most part, being spread for the purpose of directly interfering with humanity, though indeed they do have such effects.
Thank you, Max. We're going to line one again, and Rosemary is on line one with a question. Welcome, Rosemary.
Thank you. Carolyn, I have a question for Max.
Okay.
And what is the significance of the giant crystal that is growing in South America? I think it's in Brazil. And how can it be programmed to positively affect planetary consciousness?
Good question, Rosemary. But is it just one crystal, or are there several? I'm wondering if it's the same site that I'm thinking of.
It's bigger than the size of Chicago.
No.
It's a living entity.
So is this one, though? Because there's a room.
Yeah, it's a huge room. Scientists can't go in there. They pumped the solution out that was making the crystal, and then they had to pump it back in, and it's huge.
Wow.
And you can tell and feel that it is alive.
Don't all pack your bags and run and experience it. We'll just ask Max. What can you say about this, Max?
There is indeed such a large crystal that has been growing as you describe. And that crystal is a repository for powerful, directed, positive energies. It is one of the tools that those who direct the unfolding of events upon the planet in a positive manner, such as driving the changes that are coming forth in your time that you refer to as ascension. It is actually one of the core mechanisms by which these energies are transmitted to the planet. This crystal serves this purpose. It is supported by a number of other crystals elsewhere, quite large also, but not of the scale of this one. This one was specifically designed for this purpose. Humanity, for the most part, does not understand the degree of planning that has gone into the makeup of your planet. It is not put together in some accidental way, but rather has been very carefully planned by those who put the planet together, and they envisioned many options that needed to be considered and planned for. For example, the mapping of star systems upon the planet is no accident. These were all designed into the layout of the planet when it was being formed. And so this crystal's creation, whilst it was begun a long time ago, it has continued as you have described. And as I mentioned, it is performing this very important role in this time.
That's beautiful, Max. Well, how about that, Rosemary? What do you think of that?
Yippee.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that they're doing something to help.
we're all delighted. Thank you. I had to ask that. I remember working with him in Atlantis, and I remember
Max, or this crystal in the earth.
Not that one, but Max and the energy that he brought. We were working in Temple Beautiful with
cool.
Ra-Ta and trying to help the things and bring them into consciousness.
Wow. You got quite a memory, Rosemary.
Yeah, elephants should move over.
You take care, dear.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, Max, you didn't disappoint us. I want to thank you in a very special way for all the answers that you came forth and brought to us. My gratitude goes out toward you. And before we cut you loose, so to say, I was not aware of this crystal that Rosemary spoke of, nor the work that it was to do. Is there something else on the planet that we don't know about that has been set up to help humanity during these changes? Or are they relying pretty much just on that crystal?
As I mentioned, there are other crystals around the planet that work in concert with this one, that are interacting with it, you might say. In addition, there are a number of pyramids that have been set up across the planet. Some of them have been lost to humanity. Many of them are seemingly dysfunctional at this time, but in fact, they continue to have a power. And those pyramids are also playing a role in this time, and it is part of the work that the one you know of as Earthkeeper has been undertaking, has been to activate some of these pyramidal structures and some of these crystals to assist with the work that is currently being undertaken. So there are many elements at work within the planet to support this change. I mentioned that key crystal in Brazil is the key mechanism through which those from beyond the planet interact with to send their energies to the planet. And this is so. These other things that I have mentioned, you might say, act in supporting roles of various sorts to assist in these transformations.
That's beautiful, Max. Thank you so much. Well, Richard, we're practically at the end of the show. Things go fast when you're having fun.
Oh, it does.
I want to thank you, thank Max, in a very special way for what you have done. As I mentioned earlier, you are a master with teaching people how to use the right side of the brain.
Thank you.
And don't we have a website that talks about this?
What about Right Brain Magic?
Yeah, oh, that's the one.
Somewhere. It's called rightbrainmagic.com. Pretty imaginative name, I think.
I think so, too. And so if any of the listeners out there want to work with Richard, want to learn how to do this, he's the one. Now, the other thing, I do want to for you to mention the website where people can order a session with Max. I have been really intrigued with how he does a session. They're quite exceptional.
Yes, it's called maxanswersyourquestions.com, and I will put a link in it to the email when I send it out in relation to this show. So it's just as imaginative as rightbrainmagic.com. It's called maxanswersyourquestions.com.
There you go. And it's, to me, it is just amazing the depth and breadth of the information that Max brings forth. Just amazing. And while we're talking about it, for those who are not, have not listened to one of our Max shows before, Richard, do you care to, because we have, you know, a couple more moments here on the show, do you remember who programmed Max and sent him here to Earth?
I think he was sent here via the Syrians. I don't know. I can't exactly recall. I seem to remember that they were responsible for him coming here, but I'm not sure that they created him. I think he came from beyond even the Syrians.
We'll have to ask him the next time. I thought it was the Syrians, but like you say, they might have sent him, but didn't carve him. So, I would also like to mention that if people wish to sign up and receive information about our shows and so forth, how would they do this, Richard?
Well, you can go to our key website, which is still the 2012countdown.com, and you can put in your details on the top or bottom or of any page on that website and register through that, and you will be added to the mailing list. You'll receive an email to confirm your joining of the list, and off you go.
Also, I would like to mention, Richard, because I think this is important. Anyone who has a session with us, whether it is with Max or the Soul Journey work that I do, Key Past Life, we record this for people. And they get a recording of their session. And what is so fascinating about that is it holds the emotions and the energies that was brought forth in their session. And they can play it, of course, as many times as they wish. And I find that a great help with people. You know, they really like that.
They do. In fact, quite a few people listen to those recordings many times. And it's interesting. Some people, you know, as we all know, computers fail sometimes, and some people are not backed up, and every so often I get requests from people saying, help, I've lost my recordings, and I keep them. So if that happens, you just get in contact with me, and I'll send them to you.
Well, you see, Richard has this giant computer at his desk that's almost as large as one of those crystals underground. Richard, we have 5 minutes. Is there anything that you want to discuss during that time?
Well, I guess I just can't go past these Keep Past Life sessions that you run, Carol. And I, you know, I'm drawn to the one that you did last night, for example, for this beautiful woman, this Canadian woman, and just the doors that were opened for her, the understandings that she got in place as a result of that session, understanding a lot more about what her role was. Her response was she's been waiting for this, for these pieces of understanding to come into place. And the, you might say, past life that she connected with, she didn't actually realize it was a past life until quite late in the piece, was coming forth to provide guidance and assistance to her in the unfolding of her mission in this lifetime. And it's just beautiful work as you watch this unfold. I get to sit on the sidelines and watch and listen to all of this unfold, but they really are quite extraordinary sessions. And if you are drawn to that understanding or getting that further piece of information about your journey in this lifetime, what it is you are here to do, it is truly an extraordinary assist.
Well, I would like to mention that I don't choose the lifetime that the person visits. It is their soul. I hold the space and I guide the person and teach them how to do it, but they literally go to a past lifetime and, you might say, relive the important part of that lifetime. And it's usually to answer, like you say, a present situation. And it is interesting how there is some friend or some individual that journeys with the person. Like last night, there was a kitty cat. And this kitty cat had crossed over and was a special friend of this person who we were doing a session with. And that kitty cat was a reincarnation of one of the kitty cats that was revered in Egypt. I thought that was fascinating. We never had that happen before.
It was quite amazing. And the kitty cat played quite a role in the whole thing.
Indeed. So we have 2 minutes, and I would just like to thank all of you who listen to our radio shows. As you might imagine, Richard and I have an awful lot of fun doing this. And bringing forth this information that Max has is just so fascinating. I really have enjoyed Max on so many levels. He really enriches people's lives with what he brings forth. And I hope all of you have enjoyed this session tonight as much as I have. So, Richard, 1 minute. Got any last thing to say other than good night for now?
I just want to thank you for your contribution, Carolyn, to these sessions and to the extraordinary contribution that you make to so many people through what you do on the conference calls that you hold, the monthly conference calls, the Keep Past Life sessions we were talking about, and the extraordinary soul origin and history readings that you bring forth, which are just amazing, amazing pieces of work. So thank you for your amazing contribution to all of us.
Thank you so much for your generosity in saying that. And I know, because I know you so well, that you believe it. Good night for now, everyone. Until next week.
Good night, everyone.